Srimad-Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 9, the dynasty of Anshuman, text 48. Thus, Maharaj Katanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Purport. When one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. When situated in Krishna consciousness, one is no longer in the darkness of ignorance. And when freed from all such darkness, one is situated in his original position. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. The living entity is eternally the servant of the Lord. And thus, when he engages himself in the service of the Lord, in all respects, he enjoys the perfection of life. Translation again. Thus, Maharaj Katanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Om Gyana Chimanandasya Gyananjana Shabhyam Chakshun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhutananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Maharaj Katanga is providing us a prime example in how to be very attentive to what you're really supposed to be doing in life. You may think it's an extreme example. He had fought long and hard for the demigods and the heavenly planets, and the demigods like to give benedictions, and generally, when you're offered a benediction by a deva, you are looking out for your material interests. Generally, you would want prosperity, a beautiful, submissive wife, respectful children, and physical comforts, and a long duration of life as much as possible in which to enjoy all those things. Normally, that's what demigods are approached for, because they specialize in those things, the higher enjoyments in the material realm. So they asked Maharaj Katanga, as you heard in preceding days, I'm sure from our illustrious senior Vaishnavas present, you heard how Maharaj Katanga simply wanted to know, you asked me for a benediction. You ask me what benediction do I want, excuse me. I just like to know how much longer I have to live. Now, could you see yourself asking for that kind of benediction? You've pleased the demigods, and they come to you. Bhakta Prescott, Bhakta Elizabeth, what benediction would you like? Would the thought ever cross your mind to say, I would just like to know how much longer I have to live? No! Influenced by the Kali Yuga atmosphere, generally the first thing you come up with is, never mind how long my life is, I just want to know how much enjoyment am I going to get? Will I be happy? Will I enjoy? What types of enjoyment are coming my way? All by Krishna's mercy, of course. No, we wouldn't think that. Be so alert to our prime duty in life that we would ask, what is the balance of my life, so that I can prepare for the final test. I just remembered something. Prime example of foolishness since we were down memory lane Sunday. Before I started reading Krishna conscious literature, last year at university, I was studying astrology, Western astrology, very vigorously. I found that much more interesting than my studies at school. So I decided I would go see the top astrologer in New York City to find out what my future would be. He had an office, a posh office on Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, the posh area. So, he did my chart. And according to my godbrother, Shyam Sundar, he's not only a top astrologer, but he also has psychic vision. So, I asked him, all right, where's the pleasure? Where's the money? Where's the good times? I just looked at my chart. I see that you're going to dedicate your life to studying the soul. I said, oh, no. Look again, recalculate. Are you sure you got it right? And even I, because I was studying astrology too, I took my chart back home and there must be a mistake somewhere here. Anyway, when he said that, I asked him, well, where do you find out about that? Just in case I happen to ever be interested in that, where would you find out knowledge of the soul? He confesses ignorance. Oh, I don't know. You might try Chinese philosophies or this or that, or Rosicrucians or something, the Vedanta Society. So, yes, that's a normal human response in Kali Yuga. I just want to know how much pleasure am I going to get? What is in store for my senses? Mars Petranga sets a different example for us. He's so sharp. He's so alert. We might think this is just too much. It's over the top. To be so mindful, so conscientious of how you utilize every second of your life. But let me remind you, Nectar Devotion will tell you that such consciousness in which you're so attentive to see that not a moment is wasted in Krishna's service and every moment is utilized for Krishna's pleasure, that is a preliminary symptom of ecstatic love. So we're not just talking about fanaticism. We're not just talking about extreme pragmatics. We're talking about love. When you are so much attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can't conceive of a moment outside of Krishna's service, a moment not dedicated to Krishna's pleasure. So Katwanga Maharaj wanted to maximize his investment in terms of how much time he had left. And indeed, he was informed, as you know, that he had just a moment left in his life. We did once at one of our preaching centers in New Zealand, Gore Yoga Center. We do multimedia presentations every Sunday. And give a lecture along with the multimedia presentation because the people are so accustomed to seeing something on the screen. So one Sunday we had a presentation in which one of the devotees went out on the street, like Oxford Street, and just interviewed people. What would you do if you knew you just had a few more days to live? And the answers were, well, shocking. All contained within the paradigm of Kali Yuga. Well, I would just get out my credit card, not worry about paying it, and just buy whatever I wanted, go wherever I wanted, get all the experiences I wanted. Don't have to worry about paying the credit card. A lot of them said, especially young people, I would just get totally wasted, blasted out of my mind. some young men said, I would just find the best girl. girlfriend I could find. Especially with using my credit card, knowing I wouldn't be able to pay the credit card off, I would attract, you know, the topmost girlfriend just by throwing around a lot of wealth and money. And that way I would spend my last few days. Ladies would generally say things like, I would want to be around my family and relatives. That's as far as it went for both genders. No one thought about any supreme destination. No one is thinking how death means changing the body and accepting another body. What body will that, will your next be? Another time I remember speaking in Australia, in Melbourne, and it was a room full of Australians, about 25 or so, not devotees. I don't ask these kind of questions to devotees, but outreach work is meant for, as the Christians would say, the unchurched. So when speaking to the unchurched, you have to speak on their level and try to take them higher, using things that are familiar to them to show them things that are unknown to them. So I was asked, have you ever thought about what you would like to be in your next life? And there were so many answers. Many of the ladies wanted to be horses because they were attracted to the elegance of the horse as it gallops and the hair flies in the air, the sleek body, you know, glistening, you know, in the sun, the hair flying, the tail flying. It just makes it a very stylish, Vogue-like beauty. A lot of the men said they wanted to be birds because they were so fascinated by the freedom of flying. They thought birds had a wonderful life. One lady even said she'd like to be a snake, just slithering along on the ground, getting whatever you want inobtrusively. So on and on like that. No one said they wanted to be a human being. In other words, what they were implying so clearly was that human life is tough. I mean, you can't get through it without intoxication. Animals must have it better. So I thought I would just do some Vaishnava sociological research and have a little fun at the same time. So while they were commenting in this way, I just kind of spontaneously, on the spur of the moment, just tossed in, I wonder, folks, I wonder how many of you ever thought about pig consciousness, becoming a pig? Half the room raised their hand immediately. I couldn't believe that. No shame, just... Of course, I asked it in a sneaky way. I caught them off guard. You know, they're all involved in this discussion of what they wanted to be in the next life. So I just threw it in. What about pig consciousness? How many of you have thought about being a pig? And they explained the glories of pig life. You get to just wallow all the time, unless you're on a factory farm, which is very unfortunate. But the kind of pig life that you see in the cartoons and the Disney movies and things like that, you know. You just wallow around all day. You just don't do anything all day and you eat. And indulge in your senses freely. And just get fat. So this is the predominant mentality of people today. The question is, how are you going to protect yourself? Do you actually think you're so strong that you can resist all this contamination? Do you really think that you have that kind of determination on your own? Do you really think you have that kind of soberness on your own to just go the opposite way from all this? If you think like that, you're really dreaming. It's not possible to stand up to all this contamination any environment on your own. It's too overpowering. And Krishna himself has already given you his scientific statement in Bhagavad Gita. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya drajaya. This material in your mind is practically speaking impossible to overcome. The only way you can handle it is if you deal with it my way. Mam eva yukapajante mayam etam turuntite. You deal with the material energy on my terms and you'll cross over it. Otherwise, forget it. But there's something in us that makes us feel I'm competent. I can handle things. I've got life experience. I've got some accumulated wisdom. And I've got a lot of time left in life to work it out. So many of you, in your 20s and 30s, do you ever check that out in yourself, that feeling, I've got time. I've got time to develop. I've got time to gradually get myself together. What's the rush? How we allot ourselves in our mind all this time is amazing. It's a miracle. How we bestow upon ourselves in our imagination a full, healthy lifespan. When all around us we're seeing that's not the case. And somehow that we assume it'll happen to everyone else, but not me, because actually, you know, some or other, I'm a good person. Not the best, but I'm pretty good. And I have desires that must be fulfilled. Once again, the simple calculation we make. And if you can catch this calculation, I believe we discussed it Saturday morning, you can save yourself so much trouble. The simple miscalculation is that I have desires, therefore there'll be fulfillment. Remember? Doesn't it seem so natural and appropriate? I have desires, so fulfillment will come. It's hard in conditioned life for us to grasp the reality that material desires will never be fulfilled. You simply get the promise of fulfillment, that's all. And because the material desires are never fulfilled, there is frustration, there is anger. That's why the Vaishnava sociological analysis of war centers on frustrated lust. You'll never blame material nature for your dissatisfaction. You'll always blame someone else. How many of you in your history of interaction for the purpose of romantic indulgence, how many of you, when the inevitable breakup comes, rupture, how many of you say to the other partner, you know, the blame is material nature? No, you never say like that. You always blame the other person. Or if you want to slide out of the relationship in a very well-mannered way, what do you say? It's not you, it's me. I know, it's me. I just need some space. I'm the one at fault. You back out the door that way. Who thinks to blame material nature? Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Gunasangasa Sarasat Yoni Jamasu. Krishna says, the cause is your interaction with material nature. The whole process of bhakti yoga is meant to transform the interaction with material nature. So that instead of material nature imprisoning you, indeed, your interaction with material nature allows you to make spiritual advancement. When you do things on Krishna's terms, mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam turuntite. That's what surrender to Krishna means. Sometimes we become intimidated by the mundane connotations of the word surrender. It's like you're walking down the street and, you know, a thug comes up to you with a gun. Hand over your mobile phone, hand over all your wealth. And so, somehow or other, I've discovered that we often think of surrender to Krishna, but in that kind of way. It seems frightening, it seems like you're entering into an unknown realm, leaving far behind the comforts and stability of material existence. Let's look at that word surrender in a different way. Let's consider that surrender means living life on Krishna's terms, accepting Krishna's deal. Then things don't seem to be so intimidating, right? For example, when you enroll in the university, you're accepting the terms of the university. And you seek to graduate by successfully fulfilling the university's expectations. When you take on a job, you expect to deal with the terms of the employer. How many of you have showed up at the workplace and just told your employer, okay, here I am, and I'm just going to do whatever I want to do, and let me know when it's time to be paid. No, when you show up at the workplace, what is your attitude? Surrender. Meaning, accepting the terms of the employer. And in that way, you hope you're going to prosper. You hope there'll be benefit for you. And the employers are taught that it's not just money that you need appreciation. So they try to load up your life with as little money as possible and as much appreciation as possible. Appreciation's cheap. You're so important for the future of this company. Just like Dwayne, who's from New Zealand, traveling with me. He has a job which practically every young man would envy. What does he do? He works in IT, but not just working in IT. What is his job specifically? To test video games. All he does, day after day after day, is play video games. And he's supposed to find, you know, faults. He's supposed to find, you know, malfunctioning. That's all he does. So generally when young men hear about his job, they just drool. They play video games all day and get paid for it. This is paradise. And every time Dwayne, because he wants to spend more, he wants to give more attention to his Krishna consciousness, every time he approaches his bosses about, maybe I could reduce my working week, you know, maybe I could work part-time, or let's try to come to some agreement, they just look him in the eye and say, Dwayne, there are 500 young men waiting to have your job. If you don't fulfill our terms, we'll have no problem finding someone else who will. And what can he say? That is surrender. They tell him, every young man in New Zealand would love to work for us, have your job. Think about it, Dwayne. And he does. Well, okay, I guess I can try to push on, you know, with a normal work week. Oh, okay. Before he goes to talk to his employers about reducing his work week, you know, he talks to the devotees. He lives in Wellington, New Zealand, at what we call the contemporary Vedic ashram. These are 10 young men who live under the direction of a householder couple who are very dedicated to preaching and cultivating others. And this is an intermediate status for those who, for young men, to get themselves together in Krishna consciousness and then decide, do they want to be a brahmachari? Are they able to be a brahmachari? Or do they want to marry? Or do they just want to go on with bachelor life for some time longer? So we didn't have any. This is not the brahmachari ashram. It's not the grihastha ashram. So therefore we dubbed it the contemporary Vedic ashram. dealing with the contemporary reality that it takes a lot of preparation these days before a man can make a proper decision about his life, because speaking in terms of the non-Indian population, generally young men, they're deranged from years of intoxication. Their brains are feeble from liberal dispensation of their vital fluids. And so they're shockingly very weak physically and mentally. Now, we just don't see it fit to, as soon as a young man comes along, you know, and says, Krishna, Krishna, we slap on some saffron cloth, you're a brahmachari. Much as, you know, our Sankirtan task force loves to have brahmacharis, we don't want to produce them artificially. By the way, you might be surprised to know that generally these days in the world, Sankirtan, behind the huge, mighty powers of India, Russia, USA, and then generally UK is number four. Number five is tiny little New Zealand. The population of 3.8 million. So yes, we certainly would like that the young man immediately don the saffron, but I'm sure it's different in UK though. It's different, the young men are different here. But down under, the typical Kali Yuga lifestyle that they live is so debilitating. It's just shocking how bad the health is. Well, then again, it's not shocking when you realize they've been clubbing since they were 14 and you know, playing video games 8 hours a day, you know, year after year after year, getting wasted in so many ways. And then the fortunate ones come to Krishna consciousness. I found it's going to take at least a year or two for them to straighten themselves out, physically and mentally, before they can make a sane decision about their life. As I said, I'm sure the men in the UK are different, but I'm just giving a localized example, you know. So, Dwayne is in that contemporary Vedic ashram, and there they have independence. It's not like living in the temple. They have to maintain themselves and take responsibility for maintaining themselves, and they can go to school, they can work, or a lot of times they just put in a full-time effort to get their health back and to get their sanity back. And so after a year minimum, some of them opt for the brahmachari life, and then they've really got to be very convincing that they want to do this. They have to really convince us that they understand in full consciousness what they're getting into. Because once they get into the brahmachari ashram, it's going to be no more, Prabhu, pretty please, would you do this, please, Prabhu, pretty please, with ice cream on top, and all. Gee, Prabhu, we really need you to do this. Come on, Prabhu, don't go. It's going to be none of that. We don't have the time for that. So we want them to be fully aware of what they're choosing, fully aware of what brahmachari life is. And then when they sign up for it, they can put their hearts into it fully. And others, for example, like our Dwayne, he's got another vision for his life. So young men like that, they figure the best thing I can get is training so that I can be a genuine grihasta in the future. So anyway, Dwayne's mates in the contemporary Vedic ashram were telling him, come on, Dwayne, you got to reduce those hours, you know, spend more time in your Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And he sincerely took their advice, but every time he faces the employer, Dwayne, think about it. Your job, the envy of every young man in New Zealand, testing video games and getting paid for it. Do you really want to give it up, Dwayne? We really can't see our way to reducing your hours. Can you accept that, Dwayne? And Dwayne has to accept. That's surrender. Now, why is it when Krishna makes his offer, please surrender? Oh. You see, our psychological madness, it's irrational. It is pure madness. As if Krishna is asking for something that we have never given before. We've never surrendered to anything before. When our whole day is full, our whole day and night is full of surrender to the material energy. But here Krishna says, surrender to me, there'll be no anxiety. I'll protect you. And we're so hesitant, very wary, very cautious. And all Krishna is doing is asking that you accept his terms. That's all. Mars Katwanga, when the demigods told him, you just have a moment left to live, he considered where he's at. I like to explain to devotees that in making a proper decision, you have to do an environmental scan and you have to do an internal scan. You have to see what's the situation in the environment around you, and you have to see what's going on in your own heart and your mind. So Mars Katwanga took stock of himself. And the Bhagavatam reveals his thinking. The first thing that came to his mind, what's the most dear thing to me in my life? It's not my kingdom. It's not my land. It's not my wife. It's not my children. It's not my wealth. Nothing is dearer to me than the Brahmanas. So immediately, he clarifies where he's at. He clarifies his reason for existence. Nothing is dearer to me than Brahminical culture. Nothing touches my heart more than that. And then he begins to consider his background. He considers his upbringing, his childhood. And he reminisces that even in my childhood, I was never attracted by insignificant things or irreligious principles. And then he says quite movingly, I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even in my childhood. So, taking into account all that, what's going to be my decision? What to do? Nothing is more dear to me than Brahminical culture. Even in my childhood, I never found anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, let's consider the scene we have now. The demigods, directors of the three worlds, they want to give me whatever benediction I desire. But I don't want their benedictions. I'm interested in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm more interested in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created everything in the material world, than I am in all the material benedictions. It's a brilliant use of intelligence. Remember, he's just got a moment to live. Do we have hopes that our brain can function so expertly at such a critical moment in life when you only have a moment left? Krishna consciousness can produce that kind of intelligence, without a doubt. And Katwanga Maharaj is showing you, this is a properly working brain. This is Buddhi Yoga, intelligence applied in Krishna's service. And then he considers the demigods. They have the advantages of living in the higher planetary systems and having mind, and senses, and intelligence. It's far superior than what human beings have. But let's look at what's going on with their mind, senses, and intelligence. They're all agitated by material conditions. Therefore, even they, the devas, fail to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally situated in the core of the heart. What to speak of others like human beings who have fewer advantages? Now just see, Mars Katwanga just brilliantly making all these considerations, and then he comes to his conclusion. Therefore, atah, therefore. Jayadvaita Maharaj in the class, I remember as a, it causes me to remember as a young devotee hearing his Bhagavad Gita classes in New York. He gave a whole series of classes on Tato Brahma Jigyasa. You remember that, Maharaj? Yeah, I do. And he would just go on. Therefore, because you have wandered around in so many species of life, because you have tried to enjoy your senses in so many ways, he went through a long list of therefore. Now, with the human form of life, you must become so. It was a very nice series of evening classes with impeccable logic and bhakti shastric presentation. So, this is what Katranga Maharaj is doing. Therefore, it's conclusion time. What's the conclusion? I should now give up my attachment for things created by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I should engage in thought of the Lord and should thus surrender unto Him. And then he commented about the external energy creating the material world. And that material creation is like an imaginary town, Gandharvapur. Someone imagining they see a city or town in the forest or in the mountains. You can catch yourself doing this whenever you think you see material pleasure. You're looking at Gandharvapur. It's a visualization that's the product of faulty thinking, faulty perception. Looked at it another way, we should understand that because our knowledge is limited, we look into the material energy for pleasure opportunities. That's a symptom of limited knowledge. We look into the material energy for pleasure opportunities and we think we see it. I see it, I see it. And you turn to your friends, your family. Oh yes, we see it too. Society reinforces the vision, the Gandharvapur. Yes, it's out there, definitely. Many people have already gotten it. You'll get it too. In this way, what happens? It's a fancy sociological term I like to use. Mass consensual trance. Everyone hypnotizes the other person. And the self-hypnosis on a mass scale just builds up into a massive trance that pervades all society. Everyone is convincing one another. You see it, you see Gandharvapur. Yeah, I see it, it's there, it's there, it's definitely there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Maharaj Kutvanga says, enough of this. And therefore we have today's verse. Thus, Maharaj Kutvanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. What we are trying to do here is to indeed develop that same kind of advanced intelligence. It is possible. And we have encouragement that's for real. For example, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj about Katranga Maharaj, who, upon his being informed that he had just a moment to live, he cut off all his attachments to the material world and focused upon the lotus feet of the Lord, and that way attained the perfection of life. So Shukadeva Goswami is providing the most sublime encouragement. It's not that, you know, the Bhagavatam is some kind of theoretical, metaphysical text without all the sublime aspects of human existence. No. The emotions are there. The incentives are there. The feelings are there. The juice is there. And Sukadeva Goswami points out to Prithvi Maharaj, Katwanga Maharaj had just a moment. You've got 7 days. Just see how fortunate you are. What are you going to do? You've got 7 whole days. Now, with Kali Yuga miserly, Kripana vision, what would you say? Oh, 7 days, that's nothing. What kind of deal is that? Prithvi Maharaj was a Mahabhagwan, a great devotee of the Lord. Look what happened to him. 7 days to live. Sukadeva Goswami has another vision. Your circumstances, Prithvi Maharaj, are very encouraging. You've got more than just one moment. You've got 7 days. You see the standard Srimad Bhagavatam? What else does Sukadeva Goswami say? Kim pramatasya bahubhi. What's the use of having a long life anyway? Bewildered by years of nonsense, mistaken thinking. Better just a short life, because in just one moment of full consciousness, you can attain perfection. So in this way, Sukadeva Goswami throws out of the window this reverence for a long lifespan. Better to have a short life. Better to just be alive for a moment, if that moment is Krishna conscious. This is a different way for evaluating the quality of our life. And remember, Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging Prithvi Maharaj. You have 7 days. So much time. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna encourages Arjuna. Bhava Gyana Tapasa. Many, many persons have become purified with knowledge, by knowledge and austerity. They've come to me. Many, many persons have done. Now, you may look around and say, oh, how many do I know? Doesn't seem like many persons are becoming Krishna conscious, Prabhus. Do I really think I can go the distance? But look at things from Krishna's point of view. Krishna sees everything, everywhere. He says many, many persons have done this. So can you. Now, whose sense version are you going to accept? Yours or Krishna's? To your senses, it looks like not many people. Yeah, look around in the temple here. Yeah, some guys look fired up. Some look spaced out. Which, what will I be like in a few years with the bhakti process? It doesn't look like many are going the distance. Of course, in this exalted gathering of wonderful devotees you have. Kavi Chanda Maharaj, who's how many years? Close to 40 years, devotional service. Jai Dvaita Maharaj, are you over 40 years? And close to it, yeah. Yeah, but they're special. Sometimes I hear devotees say that. I have a god brother. Doesn't come to London. Burijan Prabhu was a very dedicated householder devotee. And so, in talking to other devotees about longevity in Krishna consciousness, I said, well, you know, there's a few sannyasis who go to the distance. Not even all of them. You want to talk about that right now? Go on. Dandavatsa Chakra, you'll find out. And a few sannyasis who go the distance. But that's about it. And I say, well, what about such and such householder? He's been fully absorbed in devotional service, both he and his wife. What about that householder? And what's the response I usually get? Oh, Maharaj, those, they're not real householders. They're mystic yogis. They're not really grihasthas, you know. In this way, the cheating mind tries to destroy whatever encouragement Krishna is giving you, whatever encouragement is there around you. So Krishna says, bhava gyana tapasa, many, many persons, they become purified. They've come to me. And what does your mind say? I don't know where those persons are. But you're dealing with Krishna. So what's wrong with accepting Krishna's vision? He sees what's going on amongst all the conditioned souls and all the planets and all the universes. And he says many, many persons. So these are some things for us to think about, courtesy of Maharaj Katanga, who, in his original constitutional position of eternal servitor, engaged himself in full Krishna consciousness and attained the perfection of life in one moment. All right, any questions? If we're fortunate, we might even hear comments from esteemed senior Vaishnavas. If you have some questions, yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we are talking about the number of people as mentioned by Krishna. Krishna also says, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye, yatadam api siddhanam kaschin mamveti tatvata. He also says that the quantity at the same time is, in terms of percentage, is very few.
Compared to all those who are going through karma kanda, jnana kanda, someone who actually comes to Krishna, that is rare. But still, there are many of those rare persons. There are so many who are wandering through the universe, unam janmanamante, janavamamprapanchate, trying to approach the Supreme Absolute Truth in this way or that way. The customer, one comes to Krishna. That, yes, that one is very special. As compared to the many who don't. But still, Krishna says, of the ones who come to him, there are many of them. But you have to take both things into account. It's not these are not statements for mathematical analysis, unless you can see the total picture. Krishna sees the total picture in all the universes. Anything else? Yes?
Oh. Isn't that that anyone who tries succeeds? Just keep trying.
Yes. Anyone who tries succeeds sooner or later. That's why Srila Prabhupada, when speaking and confronting the reality that persons come to Krishna consciousness and go away, you see it happening all the time. Or they have their spiritual progress stopped or diminished. So Srila Prabhupada would state emphatically again and again, I am spreading this Krishna consciousness movement on the authority of Narada Muni, who said, never mind if they come and go away, still their life is better. He would say it emphatically, I'm doing this on the authority of Narada Muni. Better they come than not come, even if they go away after they come. Better they come. A different way of looking at things. Of course, he would always add, there's no reason for you to go away. Still, better you come. And if you go away, your Krishna consciousness is not lost. You'll pick it up again. But he would always add, you have the opportunity to finish up your business in this lifetime. Why not do it? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.